This episode of Parenting Great Kids is brought to you by...
If you haven't heard of Madison Reed, well, it's the future of hair color. Madison Reed believes in a better way. They believe in beautiful, naturally healthy-looking hair and that all women deserve it. That's why they make their hair color in Italy, just outside of Milan, according to strict EU standards that require complete transparency. Better yet, Madison Reed is the first ever hair color free of ammonia, parabens, resorcinol, PPD, phthalates, and gluten. So if you're looking for gorgeous hair made with ingredients with integrity, go to madison-reed.com and take their easy color quiz to find your perfect shade. Get 10% off plus free shipping on your first color kit using promo code MEG, M-E-G. That's madison-reed.com, promo code M-E-G.
For 30 plus years, I've seen every type of child grow up.
Instead of giving me what I wanted, she gave me what I needed, which was truth.
Don't let emotions win. Let truth win.
Do your very best, and you should have a lot of fun while you do it. And the better you get at something, the more fun you're going to have at something.
You moms and dads are wired with everything you need to be a parent to a great kid.
Welcome to Parenting Great Kids. This is episode number 21, Talking to Your Kids About Race and Diversity. I'm your host, Dr. Meg Meeker. On today's episode, I will be talking with my dear friend, Benjamin Watson, who's an NFL player for the Baltimore Ravens. He's a father and he's a social activist, an all-around fabulous guy. As always, I'll share my points to ponder for you to start using right away. Parents, as a reminder, don't just download these episodes, click subscribe, because when you do that, you're joining my parenting revolution, and every new episode will automatically show up in your subscribed list. You won't regret it. And we'd love for you to write us a review on iTunes and let us know what you think of these podcasts. I'm always open. I want suggestions. What do you want to hear about? What guests do you want me to have on the program? So this is a program for you. So write to me. Also, we're not only available on iTunes, but the Parenting Great Kids podcast is also available on Google Play Store and on Stitcher. So no matter where you get your podcast, subscribe today and don't miss a single episode. So parents, thanks for listening. This is episode number 21. Stay with me. Friends, life is short and kids grow fast. I know that some of you can't wait for your kids to get past a certain phase and others want life to slow down. If you're like I was as a young mother, you live every day just trying to survive instead of thriving. And then one day you wake up and realize that time has flown by and you wish that you had ... Before one more year goes by, let me challenge you to make this year the best parenting year you've ever had. How? By making a few small changes in some key areas of your life. You don't need a personality overhaul, a new house, or to scour the internet for parenting tips. Believe it or not, you can make life with your kids a lot more fun, calm, and manageable by simply taking the time to make little changes in your parenting. I want to help you, and I have a great resource for you to kick off your best parenting year ever. Beginning this month, my course, Give Him a Faith in God, is available for individual purchase. I specifically chose this course to start the year off because of the importance of establishing a spiritual foundation for your children. Give Him a Faith in God is a multimedia course guiding you and sharing ways to be an example for and lead your children through their spiritual journey. And my comprehensive parenting course, The 12 Principles of Raising Great Kids, is now available along with many other resources covering topics such as parenting strong-willed children, a toolkit on how to have the talk, yes, that talk, and over a dozen ebooks. Just go to MegMeekerMD.com and click on Parenting Resources. After all, great kids are raised, not born, and I can help. Here are my points to ponder. Point to ponder number one, children learn racism. Remember, children aren't born racist. They're born selfish, self-centered. Sometimes they're born with a temperament where they're more mild-mannered, they're angry, they have a volatile temper, but children are not born racist. Racism is a learned character trait. So this is a tough but very important issue to think about. So in addition to paying attention to your attitudes about race, think about who else in your child's life is affecting your child's attitude. Your child develops his attitude about people of another race or religion by listening to what you have to say about those people. They watch your facial expressions. They listen to your comments as you're watching a television program, listening to a radio show, talking to your friends about certain topics. They are so in tune to your tone of voice, your inflections, your body language, your facial expressions. They want to know how you feel about things in life. So if your children pick up a sense of disdain or dislike that you feel towards another group of people, guess what's going to happen? Because you're bigger than life in their eyes, they're going to adopt that same attitude. The first and most important thing for you to do is check your own attitudes, because I guarantee if there's any part of you that feels racist, your kids will adopt your attitudes. Tough stuff, parents. I, as a pediatrician, understand that I'm not the influence in your kids' lives. You're the influence in your kids' lives. They adopt your attitudes. So first and most important point to ponder is children learn racism. Second point, be intentional about making inclusive and positive statements about other groups of people. While children aren't born racist, they pick up sentiments of others around them, even if they don't get negative feelings from you. So it's important that you be intentional about talking about their friends or others that they come in contact with who are different race than them, about those people in a positive way. But we are living in a time where we're so divided in our country. You know, political groups are at polar opposite ends, and there's this animosity, tremendous animosity that one group feels towards another. And it's wrong, because the truth of the matter is we truly have more in common with those people than we do differences, but we focus on our differences. So it's very important that whether it's in politics or race or religion, we talk affirmatively and we talk positively about that other group of people, particularly in front of our children, so that they learn to become inclusive and they learn to become accepting. And this takes some work. It takes some discipline. It takes some training. And that's why I'm talking about it on a podcast. Particularly today, we are trained to become very polarized in our belief system, particularly political. And it's happening even with religious belief systems. Truth of the matter is, people that look differently than us, believe differently than us, feel differently than us, still have a whole lot in common with us. My third point to ponder is this: focus on common interests that your children have with other people. Now, we don't always do this. Rather than discuss differences between children or adults of one race, talk about the similarities. In other words, talk about children as children, athletes as athletes, musicians as musicians. Talk more frequently about the deep things that those people have in common. We need to talk on a deeper level, not just on a very, very simplistic, superficial level. We do this with the sex of athletes, actors, and etc. We need to learn to do this with race as well. So rather than talking about white groups of students or black groups of students or certain neighborhoods, we need to talk about kids and we need to talk about adolescents. These are very subtle differences, but these are the small changes you can make in your conversation with your kids that will bring about extraordinary attitude changes in your children. Children learn racism, so you need to ask, what are you teaching your children about races? Second, be intentional about making inclusive and positive statements. And third, focus on common interest among groups of people, particularly when you're talking to your kids about it. I want you now to listen in on a conversation I had with my friend Benjamin Watson about talking to your kids about race and diversity. It's such an important topic. I know you're going to love it. Well, I'm really excited because I have a wonderful friend and guest with me, Benjamin Watson. Ben is a NFL player. He's played for 12 years. He's currently tight end for the Baltimore Ravens. Unfortunately, he's recovering from an injury right now. But what many people don't know about Benjamin is that he's a husband, a father of five, and an activist. And he has a book called Under Our Skin, Getting Real About Race. Ben, thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you, Dr. May. Good to talk to you again.
Oh, you know, you're a hero of mine. Not just because you're the NFL, but because I don't even really know that much about football. But I really don't. But I love that you are taking your work very seriously and that you're out there speaking out for what's good and right. And you're really a social activist, and particularly regarding racism. So as you look back over the past 10 years, you've been in NFL for 12, but specifically over the past 10 years, what changes have you seen, not just in the NFL, but in our country at large when it comes to racism and race relations?
It's funny you mentioned the word activist, because I never think of myself in that way. But I think that in the times that we live in, there are a lot of different causes we can be involved in. And I think that over the last 10 years, especially when it comes to race, we have over the last 8 had a brown president. And I think that that in and of itself has kind of created an atmosphere where race is being brought more to the forefront than it did before. I think on one hand, when the president was elected, there was an idea that we were going into this post-racial America. And while, you know, the politics aside, it was, you know, obviously a landmark time for him to be elected as president. I think that what's happened is a lot of people collectively, we thought, oh, we're over this race thing, and that was not the case. And so when you look over the past 4 years, especially, there have been a lot of different instances that have come up where race has been at the forefront, whether it is certain protests or riots or police-citizen altercations or any of those things. And so over the last 10 years, I would say that for me, I've seen race become more of an issue, more of something that's been talked about, largely because of what I said before, but also because we live in a time where media is stronger than ever, and where we have social media as well as the traditional media, and we're able to see different things, and people are able to voice their opinions. And so we're in a time where something happens, and then we can look at our Twitter or our Facebook, and you know, I've done this as well. I put my ideas out there, and other people are putting their ideas out there, and you can kind of see that while on the surface we talk about race not being as important as it was before or as big of a divide as it was before, it obviously still is, and you can still see that a lot. So that's kind of the change I think I've seen. But also on the flip side, where it's been an issue, you also see a lot of people who are campaigning against it. You see people who are willing to stand up and stand for what's right, and to call it what it is, to call it sin like it is, and to confess their missteps in this area, and be people that are trying to bridge the gap in this specific topic. And that's kind of where we have to make a choice. Mm-hmm. And where I have, I think, gotten a little more involved. Obviously, over the last 10 years, I've grown up, I've gotten married, I've become a father. All those things happen over the last decade. And it's amazing when those things start to happen, you start to realize the importance of issues like this.
Yes. So I think that social media and media in general, while it gives us a peek into what really happens on streets and in cars and things like that, I wonder if in some ways it really fuels racial tension. Do you think that it does, or do you think it's made it better?
In some respects, I think it's made it worse. And then, as I mentioned before, and others, I think that some people are being challenged, and you're able to at least see what you're dealing with. It's not all bad, but it's a lot worse than we thought, and it's not all good, but for some people it's a lot better than we thought.
Yeah.
And so I think that on the bad side of social media, sometimes something happens and it's able to be polarized, and we jump to conclusions based on a short snippet of audio, or because of what somebody said, or because we see a short video, and we all jump to conclusions based on our backgrounds.
Right.
We all have specific lenses that we see the world through. And the bad thing about social media is that we never usually get the whole picture. And so we're not really training ourselves to think about things and to digest and to peel back layers and to dig deeper. We're kind of teaching ourselves to react immediately to the first thing we see. And a lot of times our assumptions can be wrong initially.
What did your parents teach you growing up about race, and what was it like growing up for you? What did they do that helped you, and what did they do that you think made life a little bit harder, if anything at all, in overcoming racial divisions?
Yeah, well I think growing up Black, and this is something that that when I talk a lot to my white friends about it, with friends that I can be honest with, and we can really talk about these things, is when you're Black, you always are aware of of race. From a very young age, for me, it was early on, but then I really had something happen in third, fourth grade, and I really realized, oh yeah, you're black, you're different. What does this mean? From a very young age, you're always aware of being the minority. The places mm-hmm. that you go a lot of times, you look around, you know, we're in a restaurant the other day and I noticed that my wife and I are the only black folks in there, except for a couple here and there. Whereas if I ask some of the white patrons, they don't even think about it. No. And it's not their fault.
No,
at
it's,
all.
It's just the way it is.
Exactly. Just the way it is. And so you have an awareness, you have a shared identity. And then growing up with my parents who lived through you know, many of the things that you did, who lived through the civil rights era, growing up with my grandparents, whose great grandparents, you know, were right after slavery and all the things that they went through. And then, you know, dealing with my own issues that have happened to me, you have this shared experience. But the great thing that my parents always taught me was that although people may treat you a certain way, and although you may need to be better than others because of your skin color, just because someone treats you a certain way doesn't mean that's how you treat them. Mm. And that's something that was preached loud and clear in my household, is that you treat everyone with the same respect, even if it's not reciprocated. And they also taught me that no matter what has happened during your life or in their lifetime or in their parents' lifetime, it doesn't change the ideals and the aspirations that you have for yourself. Mm-hmm. If you want to be whatever it is, you go and you try to be that. You study hard, you perform well, you set goals for yourself and you attain them. And so while we always had healthy, you know, robust discussions about race in our home and we understood all the implications, there was always an understanding that that doesn't hold you back from what you want to do. And it also was an understanding that all of any group is not against you.
Right.
I witnessed growing up some of the greatest supporters of my father, people who paid for him to go to seminary, people who supported our family financially as well as emotionally, spiritually, in other ways, were white men, were white women. Mm-hmm. Some of my dad's, my parents' best friends to this day are still white people. So while we have this black-white thing in America, I was always taught that you still judge people as individuals and by their own character.
I think that's one of the biggest challenges today is media sort of brands people. But the reason I wanted to ask about what it was like for you as a child and how your parents responded is because I am talking to parents about what parents can do to help their children grow up without racial biases, because children are not born racist. It's a learned behavior. And I think that one of the first places they learn that is in their homes, obviously from their family. So clearly your parents taught you this is an issue, because in third grade you were hurt. And then your parents said, well, this is how you respond to it. Was that hard for you as a child being told this is what happened, but you still have to respect and like people who did this to you?
It was very hard because I was basically told by some of my friends if I were white, I would be accepted in a way that I couldn't possibly be because I was black. Even though I was, you know, popular kid in class, there was a certain thing, certain acceptance that I couldn't have because of my skin color. And so things like that happened along the way in the life of a young person, a black person, can definitely breed seeds of animosity, and they can turn you against people you don't know. But I would even push back a little bit on what you said earlier, that children aren't necessarily born racist, but we are born with sin. And I think that racism is simply an adult manifestation of that self-centeredness, that pride. Because what it simply is saying that people like me are better than people like somebody else simply because of how I was born, who I am. My cultural makeup simply makes me superior to someone else. And that's simply a form of pride. It's a form of self-centeredness. So the seeds of racism are there with any child, no matter where they're born.
Right.
Because these children are the ones who turn up into the adults who are racist.
So how has your experience growing up with your parents influenced the way you are raising your kids now?
Yeah, well, one thing my parents also did, you know, I can remember even from a very young age, my parents didn't really shelter us from everything that was uncomfortable. And so we learned about history, whether it be Revolutionary War history, Civil War history, Antebellum South history, Reconstruction, slavery, civil rights. We learned about a lot of those things because, well, number one, my dad loves history. but number yeah. two, it was important for us to get a background and understanding of where we are to this day and how we got here. I mean, collectively as a country, but also as Black Americans. And so one of the things that I think I picked up from them is the importance of being the gateway for what my children hear, but not being a wall. And so, for example, when something happens on television, even yesterday there was a shooting in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And, you know, we all remember that. And, you know, it was on TV and my children are asking questions. My oldest is 7, about to turn 8. And it's a teachable moment,
right.
To show them that this is the world we live in. These are the things that happen. This is why they happen. This is how we approach it. This is how we move on. This is how we grieve. This is how we pray for other people who are going through these things. Even when you look back a couple years ago to some of the events of the summer of 2014 and you talk about Ferguson and Eric Garner in New York and these highly publicized police-citizen altercations, you know, no matter what happened, they were on TV a lot.
Yes.
And they had a lot of racial undertones. And telling my kids, you know, this is what happened with this person. This is what happened with that person. We don't know exactly everything that happened because we weren't there. We're still getting information, but not being afraid to introduce them to these heavy issues that they're going to have to confront later on in life, because we have a chance now as parents to introduce them to these issues in a way that teaches them how to think through them mm-hmm. and teaches them how to not necessarily jump to a conclusion and label someone or label a group of people, but to look at things individually, wait for facts to come out, and then have strong opinions about it once you understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest ways we keep perspective on who we are in relation to other people, you know, and not seeing ourselves as better than anyone simply because of the color of our skin or because we have certain talents or capabilities, is by understanding that we all need forgiveness. We're all fallen. We all have failures, parents included, you know, myself included, being honest with them, saying, you know what, I shouldn't have yelled at you the other day and I'm not perfect. And will you forgive me for that? I think that goes a long way when we put them into the world and they have to deal with things like race, because they are able to understand that, you know, I'm not better than anyone simply because of where I grew up or who my parents are or because of my skin color.
I hope you're enjoying this conversation with Ben Watson. We need to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Parents, I know so many of you are trying to live healthier lives, but if you're like me, you know that on many days, living a healthy lifestyle plays second fiddle to living a hectic lifestyle. That's a struggle we're all familiar with. So let me tell you about Daily Energy, the natural one-a-day solution that will help keep you on the right track every single day. Daily Energy helps your body absorb nutrients from the foods you're already eating because it has digestive enzymes and essential prebiotics and probiotics. Daily Energy also delivers the antioxidant equivalent of 10 servings of fruits and veggies. Think how long it would take you to prepare that every day. Just for being a faithful listener of this podcast, they've got a special offer for you. You can try Daily Energy for yourself and save 30% when you go to getdailyenergy.com/Meg. Friends, you don't have to sacrifice healthy just because you're busy. Just go to getdailyenergy.com/Meg and get 30% off your Daily Energy order today. Moms, you're going to want to listen to this. I know you're busy. You've got the kids, the job, the demands, the expectations, and of course, you still need to feed your family healthy meals. But that means another trip wandering around the grocery store trying to figure out what to buy and what to cook for dinner. Let me tell you about Prep Dish. Prep Dish is a meal planning service that sends you an email each week with a grocery list and a prep ahead list so you can easily get all your meals ready for the week minus the stress. The recipes you get from Prep Dish will only take 1 to 3 hours to cook, but will get you set with a week's worth of meals. Just imagine how much time that'll save you. Your family will eat delicious, healthy meals like smoky paprika chicken legs with roasted carrots, parsnips and fennel, or turkey and zucchini lasagna, all with food you buy at your favorite grocery store. But this time, armed with all the tools you'll need to save time in the kitchen so you can give that time back to your family. Friends, listeners of my Parenting Great Kids podcast can get started today with a free 2-week trial of PrepDish by going to prepdish.com/parenting. Don't waste any more time playing the meal planning guessing game. Go to prepdish.com/parenting to start your free 2-week trial today.
How important is for parents to take a hard look at themselves and their own hearts and their own feelings and their own thoughts and really look at what they're communicating to their kids, not what they want to communicate to their kids, but what they really are communicating to their kids. How important do you think that is for parents to do?
Well, we all have ideals that we want our kids to learn. And then when we look at ourselves, we say, you know what? We fall so short in this area. I hope they don't pick up everything that I'm laying down for them. So we have to, as parents, be willing to give ourselves a little bit of grace because we're not going to do this thing perfectly. There are times when, you know, in our house, I say things or I think things that I shouldn't about certain people, and my kids, you know, kids will pick up on it.
Oh yeah.
And so we have to constantly examine ourselves and be honest with ourselves about what our kids are learning from us. Well, I've talked about this topic before, but the guy who or the woman who is a living room racist, when certain things come on television or when they're talking amongst their friends, when they have friends over and they're making jokes and things like that, what are the things that they are saying and what are the things that kids may be hearing their parents say? And I think if we're honest with ourselves, you know, that can be quite scary.
Yeah.
And so it's very important. I mean, the same way we want our children to maybe pick up the trade that we have learned, whether it's carpentry or being a mechanic or being a lawyer or a doctor, we want to show our kids those things. We have to do the same thing when it comes to dealing with race, when it comes to generosity and charity, when it comes to being kind to people, when it comes to, honesty or whatever you want to show them. You have to be willing to submit yourself to the hard work of demonstrating that to the best of your ability.
Bingo. You're absolutely right. Kids are so attentive to their parents. They pick up on all of that and subconsciously they believe, well, if my parent feels like that and my parent thinks that, then that's the right thing. And so I'm going to feel that way too. Let's talk about what positive things can every American do to heal race relations, and particularly starting in their home, I guess, with their kids.
When it comes to race in our country, I think that the living room is more important than the courtroom when it comes to equality and when it comes to how we treat each other. Obviously, certain laws had to be changed and need to be changed, even some of them still, to create an environment where truly people, no matter what their background is or where they grew up, have equal chances as much as possible. But I think that it really comes down to our families. The family structure, the family unit is what God gave us for our society and to build a healthy society. And so when children are around the table or when people are invited over to your house who may not look like you, children are able to pick up on that and see what's important. Mm-hmm. When there's leadership in the household from the mother and father in the conversations that are being had over a meal, that's what changes the courts. That's what changes the public opinion, is these individual family units.
Are people having as much of a racial issue as a faith issue? Is this really a faith issue or is it a racial issue?
You know, I said a while ago that it's not a skin problem, it's a sin problem.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, obviously, when it comes to skin, in this country specifically, because this is where we live, obviously, we have to deal with it in an American context. Skin has determined a lot. Skin color, skin tone has determined a lot of how you are treated, where you are raised, what your ceiling is, what your floor is. But beneath that, the reason why it's even an issue is not because of the skin, it's because of sin. And sin is the reason why we react the way we react. We strike out in anger. Sin is the reason we do all this, so because there's prejudice there, there's pride there, and there's selfishness there. Mm-hmm. And so it is a faith issue. It is an understanding issue, the fact that God created us and that he treats us with equal value. And it's important for us to understand that, because if we come from a place of understanding that we all have the same inherent value because he created us, then it's impossible for us to treat each other like trash.
Right.
There has to be some sort of respect there. And so you're right. It is a faith issue that's bigger than a skin issue. Obviously, you have to address both, but it's bigger than simply trying to get whatever the latest the latest activist point is. It's bigger than that debate. It's bigger than a political debate. It's bigger than all that stuff.
If you never come to that place where we understand that there is something bigger than us and our attitudes operating, and that God created us, for me it's hard to understand that you'd ever get full racial reconciliation without first understanding who we all are before God.
Yeah, and we won't get full racial, and I even hate to use that term because the term race in and of itself is not even a correct term.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The term actually shows how racist we are because we use the term race.
Yeah.
But for lack of a better term right now, we'll continue to use it. But if you don't even realize, I don't think that there's going to be a time where there'll be complete racial harmony. But the point is that we can get better.
Yeah.
And we can understand that it's a constant need to repent and be forgiven. And I don't think that, especially in the context of what this country has been through and is continuing to go through when it comes to this topic, it's not a one-time fix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't just wipe the slate clean and become, you know, just oblivious to race. There are going to be times when attitudes still creep back. And it may be on a daily basis, it may be on a monthly basis or a weekly basis, but the difference is you can identify them and you're willing to turn away from them and call them what they are.
One of my concerns, I know it concerns you as well, is there a number of young black men growing up without fathers? And I wonder if many young men who are growing up without father influence are going to tend to have more hostile feelings towards whites or Asians or anybody because of that, or do you think that wouldn't matter?
Well, I think it would definitely matter. I think fatherlessness is an issue in this country, period. Whether you're black or white,
right.
Fatherlessness is at an all-time high.
Right.
And obviously the rate for black Americans is higher than white. But when you look at the increase in single-parent households across the board, it is phenomenal when you look at the past 20 years and the past 40 years. But I think that it definitely has an impact on how young black men look at their white counterparts and how they look at themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have much of an identity.
Right.
You get a lot of your identity from your parents, from your father as a man. And so when you're growing up without a father, you're constantly looking for someone to say, I'm proud of you. You did a good job. I mean, that's what I want to hear from my dad. I'm 36 years old, just turned 36 years old. And my dad tells me he's proud of me. It means the world to me.
Yeah.
And so if you grow up with that, without having that, you're going to try to get it from somewhere. So you lack identity. It's also sometimes, not all the times, but there's sometimes a form of self-hatred that happens mm-hmm. there because you're a child growing up without your God-given desire and your God-given right to have both parents pouring into you. But the beautiful thing about it is that the gospel covers that.
Right.
You know, God is a father to the fatherless. You know, Jesus comes in and teaches you the value of life. And so no matter if you had two parents or you were an orphan, the gospel is a great equalizer because it empowers you to move past your physical ailments, to move past your physical disability, which is basically what it is when you only have one parent or no parents. It can give you a new identity and a new future. God can give you all those things. And so there are great stories of people who, you know, you look at them and say, man, you should have been a statistic. And then you talk to them and God has given them a new hope and they were able to grieve the loss of not having those parents. But at the same time, he's given them this new identity in him that covers all that.
Men are critical and crucial in a son's life. Your forum is going to be in February 16th, Tampa, Florida. It's called Under Our Skin, a forum on race and faith. People can get information at underourskinforum.com. So can anybody, mm-hmm. So you said some people can stream it?
It'll be on something called live stream. The details for the live stream pricing is not expensive, but there's a charge to view it streaming. That's because, you know, it costs money to stream it through the airways. Mm-hmm. But all that is on underourskinforum.com. The actual event itself will be at the Crossing Church, which is in Tampa, Florida. And so if you're in the area, please come and fellowship with us. But if you're not, you can definitely get involved by watching it online. And I'm excited about it because of the people that are going to be there with, you know, Tony Dungy. A lot of people know him. Sage Steele, Danny Wolfel, Warwick Dunn. We have a couple of pastors, one from Detroit named Kevin Butcher, who's going to be there. And we hope that it is something that people find very helpful. We hope to peel back some of the layers and to answer people's questions and just to get to the nitty gritty when it comes to this topic, because it can be very painful in a number of different ways. But I think that any type of growth happens when you go through pain.
When you go
through pain. It's just like when you go work out and you lift weights, you tear down your muscle and it hurts and you're sore, and then you come back stronger. And that's what we hope this is. And who knows how it goes here. Maybe we do it somewhere else if it goes well. But I'm excited about it, definitely.
Well, I'm excited. And as I told you before we started, I'm just really, really proud to be your friend and to watch you do all your great work. Before we go, to all of our male listeners out there, they would probably like to know, but they would be chicken to ask, what is your greatest NFL moment in your 12 years?
Other than getting drafted, which was a big moment, I would say, I had opportunity to be a part of two Super Bowl teams. And the first one was a great experience because we won, but it was bittersweet because I wasn't able to play. I tore my ACL. But the second one I was able to play in, and we ended up losing. So I have a couple of almost great moments, and I'm still waiting for the super, super great moment. But being a part of those two games, those two teams, really, you know, when you're in it, you're not really thinking about it.
Yeah.
You're not. I mean, you're just going to work every day. Honestly, you go to work every day and you go to the playoffs and you keep on working and you end up in the Super Bowl. But now looking back on those times, as it's snowing outside now, I was just thinking about those playoff games late in December when you're, you know, about to clinch a berth at going into the Super Bowl. So I would have to say those times.
Very, very fun. Before we end, I've got to say one of the most exciting things happening for you in 2017 is a new book that you wrote that's coming out. What's the name of it and when does it come out?
New book is called The New Dad's Playbook, Gearing Up for the Biggest Game of Your Life. The New Dad's Playbook. And Dr. Meg Meeker actually wrote a phenomenal foreword to the book, so you got to check it out just because of that. That right there gives the book credibility.
Oh, no.
That gives the book cred. So,
I'll tell you, I will have to tell you, that was one of the most fun reads I've ever done, because you describe in the book, I don't want to give it away, but you describe a time. Just for our audience to know who you are, your wife was pregnant and you're in a locker room and you are ordering her maternity clothes on the internet in your locker room. And I go, what man does that? Every man needs to read this book just to get it. If Ben Watson does that, they should be doing that too.
A man who wants to keep his wife happy and possibly keep practicing for another child. That's the type of man who does that type of stuff.
It's a great read. It's a great read because it really brings men into this. And it's a great read for moms too, because we never know what you guys go through and how worried you are about pregnancy and what to expect.
Basically, it's almost a what to expect when she's expecting from men. It's going to give men practical, even technical sometimes terms about what their wife is going through the stages of pregnancy, what the baby's going through, what they can feel and see at different stages of development, but also gives a little some funny stories from my experience with my five children.
Yeah.
Some things that I didn't do quite right, some things that I wish I would have done better. But hopefully the whole goal is to tell you that you can do it. You can be the man that your wife and your child needs, no matter what society says. You can be that person. And so you're right. This book is for men, but it's also for women who want to get their man on the right track.
I'm excited. I'm really tickled that you wrote the book. So thanks so much. This has been wonderful. Great, great, great stuff. God bless you. I know you got a lot of great work to do, and I'm just excited to sort of watch from the sidelines.
Thank you so much, Dr. Meg. Thanks for having me. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Hopefully, it won't be the last time on your podcast.
No.
Hopefully, I come back.
No, you will come back, because I want to talk more about your book and part two. I'd like to thank my guest, Benjamin Watson. He's an extraordinary man.
a great father, a wonderful activist. I highly encourage you to attend his conference in Florida if you're able to. If you're not, go home and Google him and just read about some of the things that Benjamin has written about and talked about. He's got some fabulous books. He's got a fabulous new parenting book coming up for dads that I think all dads should read because it's fun. It's light. I learned a lot from reading it. And it's very uplifting. It's very encouraging for fathers who are having their first child. So I highly encourage you to read his books. And if you can get to his conference in Florida, please do. I'd like to take a moment. I want to recap my points to ponder as I always do at the end of my podcast. One, check your own feelings on racism because racism is learned. Two, be intentional in teaching your children not to see racial differences. And three, focus on the similarities of other people, not just on their differences. So remember, great parents out there, and I know you're a great parent because you're listening to the podcast and you're trying. And even after I parented my kids are grown and now I'm on the grandchild cycle, I'm trying just as hard as ever. So until next time, parents, remember, great kids are raised, not born.
Hey, this is Bobby, producer of Meg Meeker's Parenting Great Kids podcast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to episode 21, talking to your kids about race and diversity. You can like Dr. Meeker on Facebook and follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD. Just as a reminder, go to MegMeekerMD.com and sign up for her newsletter for giveaway opportunities and updates. And don't forget to share the podcast, write us a review, and click subscribe so you won't miss an episode.